from the Cyber Hub bunker and studio. You're tuning in to the Cyber Hub podcast. And now for your host and CISO, James Azar.
Good morning, security gang. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Hub podcast. It's great to be with all of y'all this Tuesday morning, March 26th, 2024. We've got a packed show today. A lot going on in the world of geopolitics that's leading to the type of information that helps us understand exactly who the enemies that are targeting our organizations are and what our adversaries are up to. We'll talk about whether or not the solutions we're coming up with here on this side are even very effective, as well as a bunch of patch now notices and vulnerabilities that require your attention. Thank you all for tuning in. If you have not checked out our Substack, please make sure to do so. JamesAzar.substack.com. You can get all the latest exclusive articles are available there. And if you support our podcast through Substack, we send you one of these awesome travel espresso mugs. They're great. They're 6 ounces. Gets you everything you need to get your cup of coffee on the road, especially if you enjoy espressos, because the big mugs are really, really big. And they don't really help you when it's an espresso because you're like having to do this. So there's that. Please make sure to subscribe. Follow us on your favorite social media platforms. Join me for our traditional coffee cup cheers. Coffee cup cheers, y'all. Everyone tuning in on YouTube, good morning. On X, good morning. Rumble, Twitch, LinkedIn, good morning to all of y'all. Let's go ahead and kick off with the Treasury as Department of Office of Foreign Assets Control, OFAC, sanctioning 3 cryptocurrency exchanges for working with OFAC-designated Russian dark web marketplaces and banks. The first, Bitpapa, is a peer-to-peer virtual currency exchange that caters to Russian nationals. It's facilitated millions of dollars in transactions with 2 OFAC-designated Russian entities, Hydromarket and Granitex. Oveshko, Ugryanchoy, I've been trying to say these names, but it goes by T-O-E-P, is a virtual currency exchange that operates as a Next Change or NetX24. That's also sanctions for enabling digital payments in crypto and rubles to OFAC-designated entities, including Hydra Market, Seber Bank, Alpha Bank, and Hydra Market. Hydra Market was the world's largest dark web market. They sell drugs, money laundering. It's got a turnover of $1.35 billion just in 2020. It has 19,000 registered seller accounts and serves at least 17 million customers. Crypto Explorer DMMC operates as a crypto exchange in Russia and the UAE, facilitates conversions between virtual currency rubles and the dirhams in the UAE. It also provides cash services in Moscow and Dubai, allowing customers to load funds onto a Seber Bank and Alpha Bank credit card to OFAC designated Russian banks. All 3 of these exchanges have now been sanctioned, and you want to keep your eye on that. By the way, that also means that as you see ransomware operators now, they're going to be changing a bunch of stuff there. That's where this disruption is really aimed at. After the UK called out the Chinese hackers for targeting parliamentary and emails and the country's electoral commission, New Zealand has also said it's linked cyber attacks on its parliament to a Chinese state-sponsored threat actor. On the same day, the US slapped sanctions against 2 Chinese hackers and a China-based technology company serving as a front for malicious cyber operations. The UK called out and sanctioned the same entities for hacking onto its own systems. The tech firm Wuhan Zyroshi Science and Technology Company Limited has been operating on behalf of the Chinese Ministry of State Security and is part of China's state-sponsored apparatus, according to the UK. It's identified as Wuhan XRZ. The company is associated with APT31, also known as Judgment Panda. The group is accused of conducting cyber espionage operations on behalf of Beijing and the CCP. According to the National Cybersecurity Center of the UK, the UK Electoral Commission systems were highly likely compromised by the Chinese state-affiliated entities between 2021 and 2022. You remember we brought this story back then here on the show of how they hacked the voter registry in the UK. And while no parliamentary accounts were compromised during that breach, it's highly likely that the threat actor accessed and exfiltrated email data and data from electoral register. Now you ask yourself, what would the Chinese do with that? Well, the Chinese operate a platform called TikTok. And if you know the emails of the people and you know their names, and you can potentially influence the way they think and the way they go about voting in their local elections. And that's a very, very big strategy in the China 100-year plan. See, China doesn't plan world domination by war. They plan world domination by essentially splitting their largest competitors, that being the United States, with its internal challenges that we have here, as well as UK, Germany, France, and many others. They see that internal festering of a democracy, because democracy is by nature messy, actually serves them best. And by leveraging TikTok, they're able to do that. So there's that as well. That's why they would do this type of attack. If you're asking yourself why, that would be the main propeller for them, is how can you influence how people vote? How can you influence how they think about something? And then how can you present them content that could potentially hinder them? And that's a threat to our elections coming in November of this year, only 8 short months away. So there's that as well. Something to keep your eye on. The Iran-affiliated actor Muddy Water has been linked to a new phishing campaign in March of this year that aims to deliver a legitimate RMM, a remote monitoring and management solution called Atera. The activity took place from the week of March 7th through March 11th. It targeted Israeli entities spanning global manufacturing, technology, and information security. They've sent emails with PDF attachments that contain malicious links, according to Proofpoint. While this method is not foreign to Muddy Water, the threat actor has recently relied on including malicious links directly in email message bodies instead of adding the extra step. Muddy Water's had a bunch of attacks attributed against Israel, especially since the October 7th attacks by Hamas and the subsequent war going on. The latest attack chain involves embedding links to files hosted on file sharing sites like Ignite, OneHub, Sync, and Terabox. Some of the pay-themed phishing messages are said to have been sent from a likely compromised email account associated with a co.il domain, which are the domains in Israel. So some locally in Israel, they would use a co.il type of attack there as well. This is a shift in Muddy Water's tactics, as they've dubbed Lord Nemesis has targeted Israeli academic sectors by breaching software provider named Rashim Software, in which there was a supply case threat there as well. So a whole bunch of data on this one, but as you can tell, the geopolitical threat actors still remain out there. CISA, for their end, are now adding active exploits for Fortinet, Ivanti, and the NICE Linear Emerge E3 series to its Kev catalog, citing evidence of active exploitation against CVE 2023-48788. That's the Fortinet FortiClient EMS SQL injection vulnerability. We talked about that yesterday on the show if you missed it. CVE 2021-44529, or that's the Ivanti Endpoint Manager Cloud Service Appliance Code Injection Vulnerability. And finally, CVE 2019-7256, NICE Linear Emerge E3 Series OS Command Injection Vulnerabilities. All of these have active exploitations, and if CISA added it to there, that means that there's been successful compromises done using those vulnerabilities. And because of that, CISA's and the FBI on Monday published a Secure by Design alert urging organizations to review software products to eliminate SQL injection vulnerabilities. Products vulnerable to SQLI, CISA and FBI say, has put many customers at risk, as evidenced by the attack on the Progress Software MoveIt solution last year. CISA, for their end, and the FBI urge executives at technology manufacturers to mount a formal review of their code to determine its susceptibility to SQL injections compromises, and encourage all technology customers to ask their vendors whether they have conducted such a review. There are other ways to mitigate these sorts of threats. SQL injections typically are performed one of two ways: vulnerability access into network, or through APIs. You're able to monitor your APIs. If you've got full visibility, you'll able to actually put in and play some sort of SQL injections. You can also do that within your WAF and many other ways. There's many existing tools that can help you mitigate that, but nothing solves it on a code-by-code basis as well. Apple over the weekend released a fresh security update for iOS and macOS devices to resolve an arbitrary code execution vulnerability. The issue, CVE 2024-1580, is described as an integer overflow leading to out-of-bounds write, impacts the core media and web RTC components of both iOS in macOS and could be triggered during image processing. The security defect isn't specific to Apple, but affects the DAV1D open source AV1 cross-platform decoder and was resolved in the DAV1D version 1.4.0 in February. That's the push for 17.4.1 on your iOSs as well as the latest in Safari and all the operating systems there as well. Over 100 organizations in the US in EU has been targeted in a large-scale phishing campaign distributing the information stealer malware known as Strela Stealer, according to Palo Alto Networks. Over the past 5 months, Palo Alto identified multiple large-scale campaigns carrying attachments and deploying the info stealer in the form of a malicious DLL. Following an initial wave of emails in November of last year, the attackers launched two more in January or February of this year, mostly targeting the same North American and European regions. They're tailored to local languages. The spam messages were mainly sent to organizations in the high-tech sector, meaning technology, with entities across finance, professional and legal services, manufacturing, government, utilities, energy, insurance, and construction were all targeted as well. So this wasn't just limited to, per se, SaaS platforms. It was across the entire demographic there. Unlike earlier Strela Stealer campaigns that features an ISO attachment containing an LNK and HTML file designed to fetch the malware from a remote server, the recent attacks involved a zip attachment that contained a JScript file designed to drop the final payload in the form of a DLL. And so they do this to evade essentially detection by security vendors, according to Palo Alto. And this is an evolving method, something to keep an eye on. By the way, if you know, one of your questions in a situation like this would be, how do we stop this? Well, their actors are continually starting to use zip files as kind of an initial point to drop malware. You could block zip and provide an alternate. An alternate would be OneDrive, you know, any one of the file share type of solutions. That's kind of, all right, anything over 25 megabytes or anything over X amount of size where you've got to zip it down, upload it here, send that link to the parties and vice versa, provide that link or that box to the parties, and that way information is shared that way, and you kind of reduce the risk of that threat. Again, this solution doesn't fit everyone because it just depends on how your business operates. And so keep that in mind as well. Cyber criminals are increasingly using phishing as a service platform named Tycoon 2FA to target Microsoft 365 and Gmail accounts, and they're bypassing two-factor authentication protections. This was discovered by Sequoia analysts in October of last year during routine threat hunting. It has been active since at least August of last year when the SAT Tycoon group offered it through private Telegram channels. The phishing as a service gets share similarities with other adversary in the middle platforms such as DatSec, OTT, suggesting possible code reuse or collaboration between developer. Most likely collaboration is how we see these things go through. There's multiple stages to how this operates: the distributed malicious links via emails with embedded URLs or QR code, tricking victims into accessing phishing pages, a security challenge like a Cloudflare turnstile filters out bots, allowing only human interaction to proceed, to the deceptive phishing site background scripts extract the victim's email from the URL to customize the phishing attacks. Users are quietly redirected to another part of the phishing site, moving them closer to a fake login page. This stage presents a fake Microsoft login to steal credentials using WebSockets for data exfil. The kit mimics a 2FA challenge, intercepting the 2FA token or response to bypass security measures. And finally, victims are directed to a legitimate looking page, obscuring the phishing attack success. All in all, you can see the beautiful map here of how this operates, something really worthwhile of checking and hardening your controls in play. One way is using apps or using notifications to do that, because then they can't hijack the actual typed in code. So just a way to think about that as well. Our final story of the day: Senator Bill Cassidy sent a letter to HHS Secretary Xavier Becerra with 11 questions about the breach to the grant payment that cost taxpayers $7.5 million last year. The unidentified attackers took over an email account of about five grantees and tricked HHS into sending funds to bank accounts they controlled, according to the report. Cassidy, the ranking member on the Senate's Health Committee, said he wants answer no later than April 5th. The affected program, the Health Resources and Services Administration serves at-risk population, including children, pregnant women, and patients in rural population. The disruption in grant awards caused by this breach has the potential to delay patient care and create financial strain on healthcare facilities, which is all very, very true. There's a whole bunch of stuff going around legislation now, especially around healthcare, especially following the change healthcare and the impact that's had on the healthcare industry as a whole, which is significant. So that's it for our show this morning. We'll be back tomorrow with a whole lot more. The show airs live at 9 a.m. Eastern. It's replayed on our podcast, on our LinkedIn podcast, CyberHub podcast page at 11 a.m. You can also catch it on our Substack, and you can get the written summary with all the show links on our Substack or on your favorite podcast listening platform, as well as wherever you're watching us in the show notes. You can see all the stories and all the links there. Thank you all for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day. And most importantly, stay cyber safe.
We love feedback, so make sure to connect with us on social media and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.